All right, hopefully the game show in the other room is wrapping up, because it's time to start our final set of afternoon sessions. First, we have Donald Malloy, who's the chairman of OAuth, the Initiative for Open Authentication, and also director of business development for LS Experts, which is an open source authentication company. And then OAuth, as you may know, is industry alliance that is pushing for open, secure authentication protocols to replace the various proprietary things that currently exist. So Donald is giving us a talk on open source authentication, security without high cost. Please welcome Donald Malloy.
Good afternoon. How's everyone doing?
Good.
Okay, I'll try not to blast you too much with my voice. I can sometimes get very loud, except when I'm talking to my wife, because then she says, I don't hear you. But then she says I'm loud. I don't quite understand how that happens, but, you know. Anyway, so I will talk to you today about a couple different things, and if I can figure out how to start this thing. First, we're going to talk a little bit about why do we need strong authentication. So if you think about it, what's going on in the world today, you know, fraud continues, right? It's not going anywhere but up and away, right? We'll see some numbers that are they're staggering, but just last year alone, 10 million Americans were victims of fraud. $3.5 billion, and these are numbers that are reported. And just like many other crimes, things go unreported. So the numbers are actually much higher. There's a website called Privacy Online, and you can look at the breaches and the hacks that are reported every day, and there is at least a couple every day. Small ones, little doctor's offices, chiropractic offices, different things like that. But it's not a once a year type event these days. It's regular occurrence. It's just like, you know, break-ins and robberies in a big city. So stealing the passwords is the main focus. So what do these companies have in common? I used to show this slide a number of years ago. I put four companies up there, and they're still there, I think. Well, no, they're not there. Yeah, Apple and Sony and Google and RSA. So at the time, Apple was the largest company in the world, Google the largest internet company, Sony the largest entertainment company, and RSA the largest security company. They were all hacked. Does that say something? When the largest security company in the world gets hacked, things are, you know, they're pretty scary, right? We won't show that, but this is just looking at the different size of the hacks, right? It's a big business. It's no longer just, you know, guys stealing, you know, a couple credit cards. When I used to live in San Jose and there was a ring of thieves, they had some young college kids who were working in all the restaurants and they used to skim your credit cards. Yeah, this is way beyond that. I mean, these things are doing millions of credit cards. They're not doing onesie twosies. You know, the market numbers are ridiculous. You know, this is what Gartner says. $170 billion is going to be spent in IT spending because of the need for it, right? So any of you that are in IT security, if you're not, you want to have a job for the rest of your life, you learn more about security because you'll be guaranteed to have a job, right? If you look at these numbers, you know, the cybersecurity sales to end users went up 40% last year. The only thing that's slowing it down is consolidations. So where'd we come from? 1961, the password was first created at MIT. Remember those days? Look at those computers. In 2015, there were 781 breaches in government, finance, healthcare, education, business. Look at these numbers of records that have been breached. 169 million. What's the population of the United States? 320. That's half the country. Since 2005, we're upwards of almost going towards a billion records have been breached. And if you think that we only have, I don't know, it's 2.5 or 3 billion people that are connected on the internet, that's a lot of people. So we all start to have chips in our cards these days, right? Well, those of us that live in the United States, most of us, right, come from the U.S., so you finally get chips in your credit cards. I've been working on those committees for years, trying to get them to put the chips in the credit cards. And for years, Amex and Discover and Visa and MasterCard said the cost of fraud was down here and the implementation of an EMV chip was up here. Well, somewhere about 4 years ago, that shifted. It used to be when you traveled overseas, you had to cut up your cards when you came home. But all the fraud has come to the United States because Europe's been doing EMV chips since the 90s. Canada started, UK, Africa, South America, every developed country in the world had it except for the United States. So where was the fraud? It was coming here. 27% of the credit card volume and 50% of the fraud. And these numbers come from MasterCard and Visa. That's why they put the EMV chip in. And they're not fully implemented because it's chip and signature. The next step will be chip and PIN, as the rest of the world is doing. So this is, you know, things like this happen all the time, right? To major companies. I mean, like it happened to RSA, you know, responding to phishing attempts. This is what happens, right? They're everywhere. Hackers are everywhere. So the breaches, and just last year, you look at these things, Blue Cross and Anthem and the OPM. OPM, our government, right? And I don't want to be a conspiracy theorist, but if you look at nation states that is taking this information, they're not always taking it just to get money. They're taking it. They're taking the airline data, the bank data, the personnel data. They can put together a whole scenario and understand our government, everybody in the government at every level, when they travel, where they travel, who they meet with, what their family's like. They can know more about our government than we do. So if you put all these pieces of all these breaches together, you can develop quite a nice history of what's going on in our country, which is not good. Not good. So, as we said, the chip and PIN's being rolled out. The fraud is going to shift, right? Fraud is moving from point of sale to online because it's done it in every other country that implemented EMV. Because when you're online, as we know, all the purchases, I buy most everything online if I can. I don't like going to malls. But we know when you buy online, the chip isn't going to work because you're typing in your number. So that's easy for the fraudster. So why now? We're finally getting some pressure, right? Now here's some interesting things when you talk about, you may not know this in this industry, but PII, the personal identifiable information, right? Things such as biometrics, our fingerprints. We all saw maybe what happened to is Angela Merkel's deputy, assistant, or something, had put her hand up to stop it. Somebody took a picture of it. Her fingerprints, his fingerprints, were now public information. You can't get new fingerprints. It's not something that's revocable. Any of us that's in the APHIS database, I know I'm in the APHIS database, if that gets hacked, as we saw, our government databases are not secure, so if that gets hacked, there goes your information. You can't go get new fingerprints. This is a concern. So having strong security can be a real competitive advantage. I'm going to talk to you a little bit about that. There's some basic methods, right, in authentication. Simple passwords, challenge response, OTP, public encryption, you know, single sign-on, adaptive authentication, biometrics, different push technologies. It goes all the way back to 12 years ago. Bill Gates declared the password was dead. How many passwords do we have? Anybody have more than 50? I probably do, yeah. I have pages of them, right? Hopefully you get them encrypted so you keep them in a vault somewhere. So there's some issues that face IT managers, right? These things are critical in companies because people, I won't show this slide, but I used to show a slide of convenience, cost, and security, right? Three different bubbles. And as an American, we're concerned about convenience. We don't really care ourselves too much about security until we get breached, until we personally get hacked. Now, I've had all my credit cards hacked at least a couple times, even the new ones with the EMV chip on them, because the chip isn't being utilized yet. They're still using the MagStripe. until it's fully implemented, we're still going to be at risk. So we're going to talk to you a little bit about what Oath is. Oath is the Initiative of Open Authentication. It was formed 10 years ago by a group of companies, IBM, VeriSign, Active Identity, HID, a few other companies, started to be an alternative to proprietary systems. Before Oath, anyone that did a one-time password, a token type of thing, it was a proprietary system. So they wanted to be open source, right? So it leveraged existing standards, and what we did, and I'll show you, we wrote some standards and put it into the IETF, and they have been RFC'd, and now they're formalized standards. So here's what's happening, right? Entities, you know, replace, have like three major challenges: theft of the data, the inability to share data with confidence that it's not going to get hacked or stolen, and the lack of a viable single sign-on framework. So we took these challenges and we wanted to become all-encompassing, like a federated approach to authentication. All devices, all users across all networks. These are some of the members. Oath is a, I don't want to say we're an industry consortium. We're not so much a trade association. We have a very small membership fee, and many people join and they implement the algorithm and then they don't renew because it's free. The algorithms are free to use. You don't need to be a member of the organization. So if you look at anyone that is doing strong authentication, whether you're dealing with your bank, Chase Bank uses Google Authenticator, Microsoft, any SMS token, it all uses the Oath algorithms, okay? So here's what we did. We have the reference architecture in the center, and around the outside of that, we have the authentication methods, the provisioning framework, a risk-based validation framework, and the authentication and the identity sharing. And on the outside, we have the modules and the adoption and how you propagate the device. So it's open and royalty-free specifications, embedding devices, native platform support, and interoperability in the module side. So here are the three algorithms that we came up with. HOTP, THOTP, which is time-based, and then OCRA, which is challenge response. The RFC numbers are all on the bottom, and you can see the references at the end. You can download these and use it in your company, okay? And then we have some other authentication methods for the credential provisioning and the life cycle, and then the integration and adoption. We had some other things that Oath has been working on. So there are a number of products and devices that are out there on the market today. We started a certification program for companies to be able to certify that they were in fact working together. So if you buy a token from one company and using a server from another company, that they will actually work. And so these are some of the things, the stars of the things that have all been accomplished, and then some things that are still in process. So we completed a bunch of things in 2015, expanded the certification program, and got some other things moving forward with the organization. I'm not going to dwell too much on some of these because I have some other things I want you to see. Okay, and here's the Oath framework. So we get the token, the client applications with the protocols, you have the token store and the user storage, and then you have the provisioning framework on the bottom, and then you have the authentication and the identity sharing modules on the side. So if any of us heard of FIDO, Fast Identity Online, Oath and FIDO is starting to work together a little bit. We were drafting some things very similar to what FIDO is doing now. They were trying to get rid of the passwords as well, but their second version, U2F, is using a password, and it's using whatever you want, a biometric or something else. And we'll talk about something else, okay? And we do the credential provisioning. We have a dynamic symmetric key provisioning protocol, and this has been is in the process now of being RFC'd. So we want to understand the full life cycle for strong authentication. There are different approaches to supporting this in different applications, okay? We talked a little bit about the Oath certification program. It's so that we have assured interoperability between devices and servers. Okay. And I tried to hide some of these slides, so they're all coming up that I didn't want to do because I didn't have the time. But here's, you know, logging on to your bank, what happens, you know, how you give your name, passwords, get the challenge to create the PIN, and user enters it and get it creates a new passcode, and then you take that new passcode and then you enter that in. So it's a challenge and then a response to that challenge. Okay, we're going to move forward. So why is OTP still expensive? There's more than 50 companies that are offering devices, right? In various types, soft tokens, hard tokens, credit cards, credit card tokens, USB tokens, time-based, event-based, challenge response. Should be a commodity, right? I would think so, but it's not because, well, hopefully none of the manufacturers are in the room, because everybody wants to make money, and they're charging a lot of money for this. So what I'm trying to do, OTP, the organization, gives away the algorithms for free. People can implement it. So why are people still charging $40 and $50 per user to implement a token? This is a commodity. Come on, folks, it's been around for 20 years. This is not rocket science here. So we're trying to drive the cost down. So there's an organization that I'm working with called LS Experts. They were Linux-based, and it's open source authentication. So it's an open source platform. The software is free, and all you have to pay is for maintenance and support, which is about one-tenth the cost of a typical RSA, Vasco, or somebody else's implementation. So it works everywhere. So it doesn't require a client-side driver. The algorithms are generally accepted for OTP, and it supports also open and proprietary systems if need be, and you can use hardware tokens as well. So this is just probably a bit of an eye chart, which I'm sure it is. Well, a list of some of the, there's the core LIN OTP in the center, in the authentication layer, the abstraction layer, I'm so sorry, in the database layer, and then the different modules at the top. It works with RADIUS and SAML and Apache. And on the right side, you see an extraction of some of the tokens that it works with, whether it's SafeNet, which is now Gemalto, FITIAN, Vasco, Yubico, HID, Smart Display at Niagara, anyone's token that's an OTH-enabled token, this will work with. So you can mix and match devices. And we're going to move in a little bit further because I don't want to talk about all this because we're going to run out of time. I tried to hide these slides. I think when we refound it, it lost my...
Long version or something.
Yeah, I took the long version. So what about technology beyond passwords? There are things such as adaptive authentication, biometrics, fingerprint. You already heard my story about the fingerprint. What about the iris scan? You know, I know some banks are testing this at ATMs now. It's getting to be in vogue where people don't mind having their iris scanned. 5 years ago, that was a different story. We weren't very happy about that. But it's not revocable. I mean, you only have two eyes. You can't get new ones. So how do we get these strong passwords? Because we all have lots of them. How do we authenticate the user? For those of you that I don't know, heard about what happened with Apple when they came out with Apple Pay. Now, Apple Pay used, I think we heard a little bit before about it, they used the HCE inside the phone, and it's a very strong, very, very secure system. Their fraud rate was 5.6%, according to Visa. Visa's magstripe fraud rate for the last 60 years with those nice little plastic magstripe cards that are so insecure, their fraud rate has been running 0.05%. The Apple Pay was 6.5%. A couple of orders of magnitude different. Not because the phone is insecure. The phone was very secure. The banks, in their rush to sign people up, were signing the fraudsters up with a bad credit card. Like I told you how, you know, you can go buy bulk credit card numbers for 20 cents on the dollar if you buy enough of them, or probably even less. And that's what they were doing. They call a Bank of America, here's my credit card number, can I get an Apple Pay? Sure. So they were letting the fraudsters in the front door. They have since fixed that because they wanted to get people to sign up for it. So authenticating the people at the front edge is very important. It doesn't matter how secure you are if you let the bad guys in. So this is key, right? So if you look at behavioral biometrics, this is something that is going to be very interesting. It's very good. It can't be stolen, shared. It can identify the person, who you are. Every day it can identify you. And it's revocable. There's nothing to remember. There's no PII, no special equipment, easy to deploy, and it's usable. As this compares to all these other types of methods of authenticating. So what do I mean by this? Behavioral biometrics are akin to how you swipe on your phone, how you type. These are things that they came out about 10 years ago, but the algorithms weren't very sophisticated, and they didn't work too well. Today, they work exceptionally well, and these are the new methods that are going to be used for authenticating. So there's nothing to lose, you know, nothing to remember. So basically, what I want to say is that we're trying to drive a shift from proprietary systems into open systems that are easily recognizable, easily used by people, but are still secure. And that's the important thing. Security and usability do not have to be at opposite ends of the spectrum. And the same thing with cost. Right? We can keep the cost low so that we can get wide-scale adoption and yet still have the security that can protect us.
We've got about 5 minutes.
Yeah, I'm just wrapping up now. So I have, I think, a couple of reference slides here. So we can look here. Here's the Oath website. It has the architecture version on it, which is free to download. And here's some of the open source implementations for authentication, FreeRadius and Apache and whatnot. And then some more references that you can see. So through the IETF, like I said, all these products have been standardized, 420, 4226, 6238, and 6287 are the three main standards for the different tokens. And that's it. Thank you.
Okay, we have a couple of minutes for questions. If you have questions, we'd appreciate if you could come up and use the mic so it gets on our recording. Thank you.
First, I'd just like to state that at the beginning of the conversation, you said it's hard to implement the security across the board because people don't want to use it, or stiff phones, or whatever the case may be. But even when you have a solution being enough security, the top layer of your organization, that is actually the hardest to convince to use, mm-hmm. back or whatever's going on. So that's a good statement to put there. I'm wondering, is OAuth supporting the Let's Encrypt innovative out of California for assigned certs free?
Yes.
That's great.
Absolutely.
And for biometrics, the first line you had in there, is that the only one you now are considering the biometric kind of savior for anything that we're going to do related to biometrics? Because there's been so many of them, like ear canal, heart rate, or electromagnetic signature of that.
You can take any part of our body and our smell, yeah, glucose monitoring, EKG monitoring, the gait, you know, the government's using it for the, and some of them are beneficial for different aspects, like the gait, how we walk. I mean, you can tell a friend of yours from 500 yards away just as soon as you see him. You know exactly who it is. Your brain processes that. That's really good for the government to look at people in the street if they're trying to track, you know, terrorists or whatnot, walking, you know, on cameras that are located on the street. So there are different uses for different things like that. But as far as getting access into a building or an ATM machine or things like that, we still want to use the fingerprint, the iris, and those are really hard to, because like I say, once if the records get breached, which we all know, this is what I started out with. The security of our records in the cloud means they're not secure. I mean, when you put your records in the cloud, just know they're not secure. Somebody's going to find it. You don't have to know where Apple stores all their stuff for their iCloud, that it's in North Carolina and it's a big building there. You don't need to know where it is, right? But if it's big enough, it's going to get hacked, and it's that simple. So having something that you can reverse and revoke is a benefit. Anybody else?
All right. No. Well, then, thank you. Good. Very much.
Thanks.
Okay.
I did. I just copied over during the break. Should have my name on it. Maybe we should ask Bill where he copied. He copied over. I tried. No, not a PDF, not this one. This one does not have video. I copied over the coffee break. I think Bill put in a different folder, not at the Google.
I'll go
and
look.
Yeah. He said in this folder, this is the Google Drive folder. They couldn't copy it over.
Yeah, no, it's
probably... He copied it in the local folder. I tried after he copied over, and it worked.
Yeah, no, I think it was... Sorry, in this one. Wait, is that... No.
No, it has my... My first name, this one, yeah.
Okay.
You got it, okay.